Chapter 25. Solace. Solace had heard, through her implant, a harsh tick-tick. It wasn't repeated, and it was easy enough to mistake for static, had anyone been listening in. Long conditioning set her pulse racing. The rescue party had arrived. Monitor Superior Tact had said they were putting a team together. There must have been a picket ship closer than she'd thought. Now she sent out her own recognition code, just a stuttering of ticks, receiving bounce back from two separate infiltrations. The ships would have ghosted up to the broken harvest under dead momentum, gravitic drive stilled, so as to dampen any ripples that might alert the target. Everyone was so reliant on the wonders of gravitic sensor arrays, people forgot there were old-fashioned ways to do things. Then the fun would have begun, cutting into the bigger vessel's hull the moment they were clamped to it, knowing discovery would be inevitable and soon. She had no idea how many of her sisters had come for her, but likely it wasn't much more than half a dozen. Solace was shoving Chris, even as the gangsters became aware of the infiltration, pushing the woman towards the closest signal. She tried to scoot Kit along with a foot too, but the Hanny skittered away from her. They were unaware of what was going on, and, reasonably enough, didn't trust her judgment. "Trine!" she shouted. "Here!" Her voice was almost lost in the general commotion, but the Hiver picked it from the air and limped towards her. They still had the regalia, Solace saw, their arms carefully folding the pieces back into their body.
"Go! That way!"
Solace shoved Chris onwards, seeing the next few moments unfold in her mind. Heramon had gone to order the defence, but Mesmon was right there and off the leash. He was going for Trine to get back their precious relics, punching down an out-of-place cultist and shoving one of his own people aside to do so. Solace, unarmored, unarmed, went for him anyway. A human gangster got in the way and turned a magnetic pistol on her, or offered it to her, as far as she was concerned, because he was far too close and a knife would have served him better. She got a hand on the barrel and twisted it against his thumb until he wasn't holding it anymore, then slammed a shoulder to his chest and a heel onto his instep, knocking him onto his back as she turned the gun on an incoming castigar. She was also too close to really be relying on ranged weaponry, but she was just quick enough to chew the thing's blockish head off with half a dozen high-velocity flechettes, all of which left her too late to help Trine. Trine was still coming, though. Solace saw that Ollie had rammed Mesmon with her walking frame again, hard enough to stagger him. Even as he recovered, glaring murder at her, the specialist yelled some kind of war cry. A section of her frame shot forwards, turned into a makeshift metal javelin. It lanced through Mesmon's chest and pinned him to the far wall, writhing and howling. For a moment, Solace dared to hope that it might have destroyed the symbiote at his back. Then, of course, he was working his way off the shaft, bloody foam at the corners of his mouth. She put seven flechettes into him to slow him down, but reckoned their effect would be minimal. "Solace!" It was Chris's voice, and she glanced over to see the woman standing by an armoured Partheni Myrmidon.
"Trine! That way!"
The Hiver had already gathered as much and was hobbling towards Chris accordingly. Solace looked about for Kit, but the Hanalambra was nowhere to be seen.
"Ollie!"
The specialist was already scurrying in the other direction. She cast a baleful glance over her shoulder as she yelled,
"No!"
A gunman tried to get in her way, and she rammed the tip of one of her walker's legs into the man's knee. Solace heard the crunch from across the room.
"Ollie! Timo, please!"
Solis ran after her.
We'll get to the vulture! We'll get Idris!
Solis glanced about, seeing that the throne room was almost empty, though she could still hear shots outside. A group of thugs had formed up around Aklu to escort the Essiel elsewhere. Sathiel and the cult had already left by another route. The chief remaining threat was Mesmon, still nearby and almost free. She shot him another 3 times just for the hell of it, emptying the magazine, then took up the projectile rifle dropped by the man with the smashed knee. She headed after Ollie at a run.
Just leave me alone, Patho!
Ollie had taken one of the circular corridors out, following some indicator on the walker's board. She wasn't headed towards the vulture.
I've business to take care of here. Something of mine to get back. Is it your suit?
Solis demanded.
Ollie, it's not worth your life.
And it's not worth mine, and I should leave her to it. She hates me anyway. Yet Solis carried on running, barely able to keep up with the skittering of the walker. At least Chris and Trine were with her sisters.
You wouldn't understand,
Ollie shouted over her shoulder. One of the Harvest's crew crossed her path, perhaps just some perfectly innocent technician on his way to repair something. Ollie ran the man over, trampled him, and barely slowed.
You don't know how long it took me to make it mine!
She looked at her instruments and took a sudden left, then up, the walker scrabbling at the gradient, slipping a little. It gave Solis the chance to catch her. And then they had broken out into a spherical room. Someone's quarters. No need to guess whose. There was a bed suspended in A-grav in the room's centre. A big one, too, suggesting that Mesmon either liked company or was a very restless sleeper. Several tanks and hoses were set into one wall, some concession to his hybrid biology. Maybe the symbiote liked to detach and go for a swim every so often. And there was the scorpion, already mounted on one wall with its arms spread. Plenty of room for it here. Mesmon's quarters were bigger than the vulture's drone bay. He wanted a trophy, he'd said. And despite all the scorpion's threat and power, here it was no more than a specimen pinned to a card. The rest of the room was a mosaic of faces, and that was what had stopped Ollie just inside the doorway. They were virtual images, larger than life-size. Probably there were more than 100, though Solis had no wish to count them. They were almost all twisted in pain, fear, or desperation, where those emotions applied. Most were human, men and women both, and at least a handful of Partheni. There were some Hani, too, a few knots of eye-tipped Castigar tentacles, and a beautiful metal mask, probably from a Hiver frame. And all these beings were dead, Solis knew. She knew because she saw Rollo's likeness there. His last moments, from Mesmon's point of view. The Tothiat apparently liked to record mementos of his work. They were standing within his resume. She heard Mesmon coming just then, the soft scuff of him as he loped into the room behind them like a beast. He still managed to throw a solid punch into her ribs and took the gun from her, sending her tumbling down into the shadow of the floating bed. Ollie spun the walker to face him, but he just flipped her over, rolling the frame onto its side and half spilling her out of it.
I should be killing your friends now, he told Solis flatly. But my sister will deal with the mess. She's the homebody. I'm the people person.
He stepped down into the curve of the room, the gun held loosely in his hand.
I will be made to suffer for my failures. The razor will cut me for how I've handled things. But I will remember then how I made you two bitches suffer. And that will warm me when my guts are out on wires again.
Solis went for him before he'd finished speaking, and he looked gratifyingly put out at that, a man who liked his own monologues. She slapped the gun barrel aside, so he couldn't just shoot her. Then her thumb went into his eye. She struck hard enough to hook the rim of his socket and rammed his face into the hard plastic of the bed. He grabbed her throat with one hand. His ungouged eye stared at her, wide and mad. He grinned.
"They don't tell you about the pain," he explained conversationally, incrementally tightening his fingers. "When the blessing comes to live within your flesh, you know you'll live forever. But they don't tell you how these cuts and bruises still hurt. But the unspeakable understands. He hurts you until nothing hurts anymore. Then you can really reach your full potential."
He tried to snap at her fingers with his teeth, where her hand gripped his skull, and she yanked it away, trailing blood and viscous jelly. She could look into the ruined pit of his socket and see the tissues busily mending themselves. But not for long, because there were black spots dotting her own vision, and her breath was failing.
"One day, a legion of my people will make your precious angels extinct," he told her. "We are better than you'll ever be."
The sound of the scorpion wrenching itself off the wall and crashing down behind him was like thunder. Mesmon threw Solis across the room, but she bounced off the bed, landing up against the rounded wall, surrounded by the faces of the dead. How did Ollie climb up to her frame? She wondered. But of course, Ollie was still lying in the overturned walker, eyes closed as she linked into the scorpion systems remotely. Mesmon came to the same conclusion and went for her, but the big frame caught him with one boathook arm and slung him across the room. He hit hard enough to crack the nacreous wall on the far side, extinguishing a dozen dead faces. Blood, tears, a nameless alien ichor ran down his face as he straightened up.
"It won't help," he barked.
He raised the gun to shoot at Ollie past the scorpion. Two bullets sparked from its casing, then Solis tackled him and grabbed the weapon. She kicked away from the Tothiat and shot him in the arm, an event he barely deigned to notice.
"Kit, you there?" Ollie said.
It would have been a non sequitur, except Solis saw she was speaking into the walker.
"Kit, come on now!"
The scorpion went for Mesmon, who did his best to vault over it. Blades and drills made a mess of the wall he'd fallen against. Then the tail clotheslined him across the chest, knocking him sideways. The frame tried to pounce and pin him, but he rolled out from beneath it. Instantly, he was up again and made it to the fallen walker, ripping it aside to get at its passenger. Ollie was desperately shrugging her way backwards across the floor, face locked in a snarl. Solis rushed Mesmon again, kicking at his knee. She felt it grind, saw it snap back into shape a moment later. She rammed an elbow into the centre of his back, the articulated spine that was the symbiote. Maybe it didn't share in the unnatural resilience with which it had gifted him. It was like striking stone, and she felt something fracture in her own arm, a shock of pain up to the shoulder that startled a scream out of her. Mesmon, never one to miss a chance, had that arm in his hands a moment later, using it as a lever to throw Solis at the oncoming scorpion. She bounced off it, narrowly avoiding being impaled on its drill. It reached Mesmon a heartbeat before he could stomp on Ollie, half severing one arm with its cutting claws and impaling him on its hook. Using his other hand, the Tothiat took hold of the scorpion's pincer arm at its base and twisted. One foot on the frame for purchase, he contorted his whole body, muscle against muscle. With a convulsive heave, he ripped the scorpion's limb clean out of its socket, leaving it dangling from a handful of cords and ducts, the claw still snapping feebly. He went for the bubble next, finding the catch and wrenching it open before casting the armoured casing aside. Ollie was screaming in rage, and Solis staggered over to try and haul him off it. She took a foot to her solar plexus for her trouble and sat down, abruptly unable to breathe. She couldn't have said when Kittering actually made his appearance. The little Hanny was abruptly there on the scorpion's back, clinging tight with his six legs. The scorpion's tail arched over him until its tip was within range of his reaching mouthparts. Mesmon spotted him a moment later and lost a valuable moment staring, not sure what was going on. Then he decided it was nothing he wanted to permit and swatted Kit off the frame, sending the Hanny tumbling across the room.
"Now," he said,
and reached into the scorpion's opened bubble, taking hold of the control board there.
"Let's neuter your bastard pet."
The scorpion's tail lashed forwards, driving its tip deep into Mesmon's shoulder. He barely shifted, just shrugging with the impact.
"Is that really all you've got left?"
he asked, and ripped out the entire control board in a visceral tangle of severed wires and conduits. For a moment, Solis thought Ollie could keep on puppeteering the thing remotely, but the entire frame spasmed and then went still, utterly dead.
"Ha!" said Mesmon. "Ha!"
He smacked his lips, and Solis saw a greenish residue leaking from them. Abruptly, he shuddered from head to toe, swaying alarmingly until he was leaning on the bed.
"The fuck?"
he demanded.
"The exact fuck what?"
He seemed to have forgotten they were there. Something clattered to the ground at his heels. A long, black and yellow lobster-looking thing, arching and flailing. Its underside was raw, red with human blood, bristling with contorting cilia.
"Oh!"
said Mesmon, and more stuff was seeping from his mouth, nose and eyes.
"Oh! Oh, no!"
Then he jackknifed forwards, vomiting. What came out looked a lot like the sort of anatomical details people preferred to keep inside. That done, he stared down at what he'd voided, then fell onto his face and was still. Solis made a sound. It mostly conveyed disgust, but was at least partly impressed.
"You found a poison!"
Ollie had been researching, she remembered. At the time, it had just seemed a convenient cover for Solis's own message home. But Ollie and Kit had been scouring the xenobiology databases of Berlenhof's academia and monopolizing the vulture god's printers for something chemically complex.
"Kit!"
Solis called, suddenly aware that the Hanny hadn't resurfaced. She found him lying on his front, the screen on his back cracked and dead. His limbs were twitching, and she had no idea if that meant he was stunned or if he was dying. She could carry him, of course, but could she carry him and Ollie? Looking around, Solis saw that the specialist had dragged herself back to the walker. She'd prized a hatch open and was sorting through the tools spilling from it. Sensing her gaze, Ollie looked daggers back.
I guess this is where you tell me how much better the Pathos are for not getting themselves into trouble like this.
Her face was wet with tears of pain and fatigue.
Just go, Patho. Go back to your friends. Get Kit and Chris and the Hiver out. Get Idris.
What are you trying to do?
Why do you care?
Ollie, we don't have time for this. Please, just tell me. The woman scowled at her.
Walker board's compatible with Scorpion board. Link them, and I can use it to replace what that fucker tore out.
Then show me. Direct me, Solace said. I'm not a tech, but I know enough to get things done. I hope.
Fuck you,
Ollie replied, barely able to get her words out past all the anger.
Fine then. Why though? Why put off the inevitable? We all know the Pathos are coming for us to remake us all in your image, right? You're seriously going to tell me you're all real angels and that would never happen?
Solace started to work, disconnecting the board from the walker as swiftly as she could, letting Ollie's clipped directions guide her hands. She composed what she wanted to say in the moments of quiet in between, what she'd been thinking ever since her first clash with the specialist. And why do I care what she thinks? Not like it'll change anything. But Solace did care. Ollie's accusations stung because they could so easily have been true. You know the biggest topic of discussion in the Parthenon, since the start? She asked. As Ollie sure as hell wasn't going to ask her to elaborate, she continued, We asked ourselves what Dr. Parsifer actually wanted when she created us. She designed our society, coded our genome range, picked what she liked from a dozen Earth ethnicities and cultures. She even had a personal hand in a lot of our early tech. She was a polymath, smartest woman there ever was. Hate her already, Ollie responded, then said, Not that, the other one, with the yellow tape around it. And yet, we still don't know what she wanted, Solace went on, following each terse instruction. This was before the architects, you know. Did the doctor want to come back to Earth, kill every boy child and institute the tyranny of mothers? Or did she just want some part of humanity to develop that wasn't fucked up in so many ways? And she thought parthenogenesis was the best way to make that happen. She wrote a whole load of science manuals, but no sociology at all. Then the war came, and nobody had to decide. We were humanity's estranged sister, returning to the fold when we were most needed. We were the warrior angels, and everyone loved us. The Walker's board came free, because colonial tech was designed to be taken apart and cannibalized at a moment's notice. She dragged it over to the Scorpion, feeling her injured elbow every step of the way. Then Ollie talked her through what to keep and what to discard. She was expecting more of Mesmon's crewmates any moment, and the sound of gunfire still rattled from elsewhere in the ship. But she was working quickly, and Ollie's instructions were clear and to the point. It had only been minutes. Then the war was over. She went on, prizing at a bent plate, and step by step, things went sour. You know that already. It's in your Historia types too. Eventually it was so bad, we just left Hugh outright. And then we started talking again, about what Dr. Parsifer meant. You ever hear of the war party? Sounds like a riot, Ollie said weakly. It started in response to the nativists. It had one message. They will come for us, so we have to go for them first. Generals, scientists, philosophers. They were mobilizing the fleet to swing right around and come back to Hugh, only not for talks. You ever hear that? Only a matter of time, right? Ollie grunted. Start connecting now if you're going to,
Patch me in. But one day, the entire war party leadership was found dead, Solis said grimly. All five of them. All in different ships, different star systems. All shot dead.
Fuck, said Ollie, despite herself.
What, you're going to tell me that was you or something?
Me? I was in suspension. Only heard about it next time they woke me up. A lot had changed by then. And nobody knows who did it, to this day. But the cabal that took over, they made it plain. That is not us. The Parthenon will not become what you people fear. And the war party died because we were so close to becoming that very thing. Do you understand? We have the best ships, the best weapons. We come from the VAT, ready to fight, quicker to learn, just better. Fuck you! Yes, yes. Solis's hands were anticipating Ollie's guidance now. She was getting the hang of this mishmash colonial tech. But we made a decision that we were going to use our skills to be the shield and not the sword. Who knows? That decision might get made again, differently in the future. But anyone trying to do that's going to think about the war party. She laughed, half bitterly, half embarrassed. You know what media types do the rounds back home? They're things we're not supposed to see, but everyone has a bootleg copy. Stuff that students smuggle into the dorms. She stopped suddenly. Actually, I won't. Oh, no. You better finish that thought. What?
Sac Vefin, Solis said, means stories of the starving. Stories about your people, the colonials.
I can't begin to tell you how offensive that is, Ollie told her.
I know, I'm sorry. But they're mostly... There's always some colonial girl and... She's born to a hard life with no food on a hostile planet. She makes it to one of your military academies and has rivals and friends, and it's like our life, but different. More different. She's brave and has adventures and probably falls in love with a girl or even a boy or both, and...
The scorpion groaned and lurched sideways. For a moment it seemed about to fall on Solis and crush her. But then it caught its balance.
I'm in, Ollie said.
Then there was a long silence as Solis contemplated all the killing implements she had just made available to the woman.
I still don't like you, the specialist said tiredly, or your people. And if you think that finding out you all love reading goddamn school stories about all those military academies we don't have makes me like you any better than...
She hacked out a sound that was part cough and part laugh.
That was the dumbest thing I ever heard, what you just said. You know that, right?
Solis shrugged and stepped back from the scorpion.
I am not a diplomat, she said with feeling. I'm a soldier. I love the Parthenon. But that doesn't mean I want everyone to be like us. The Sac Vefin, they're stories that celebrate difference. They're all about teaching us to love the colonies despite everything. So the war party won't happen again. So we won't be like that, whether Dr. Parsifer wanted it or not.
Ollie had bared her teeth in frustration, as she clearly needed help for the next stage. At Solis's awkward look, she merely waved her truncated arms irritably. Solis picked her up, cradling her as best she could, and fumbled her into the scorpion's torn cockpit.
Ow, bitch! Ollie yelped. Are you... crying?
She had one eye on Solis, one on her board, where the displays were lighting up with unhappy colours.
You get real sad about these starvy stories.
I think my arm is broken, Solis said, truthfully enough.
Although it wasn't just that.
That's so.
My blockers aren't keeping on top of the pain anymore.
Blockers, right, Ollie said. Forgot you were better than the rest of us for a moment there. Humblest apologies.
Solis waited for her to say that was a joke, but apparently it wasn't a joke. Things had perhaps reached a détente between them, and maybe that was as much as she could hope for.
Where are your lot at?
The specialist asked, taking a few careful steps in the scorpion, working around its busted leg.
Chris and Trine are already on the Corday. That's the Partheni ship.
Solis had been trying to keep track of the coded transmissions.
You and Kit should... We'll be getting out of here on the Vulture, Ollie told her. You take your chances, with us or with your people, but we are not losing the ship. And we're keeping Idris, for that matter.
Fine. And I'm not in a position to argue, between my injured arm and the frame I've just got you into.
You bring Kit.
Ollie led the way, the Hanny held with surprising gentleness in two of the scorpion's arms. The remaining limbs all worked together to send her lurching crabwise down the corridors of the broken harvest. They ran into a couple of Aklu's people almost immediately, tough-looking men with guns. They took one look at Ollie and the scorpion and ran in the opposite direction. Distant shooting came from elsewhere on the ship.
You even know where to go? Solis asked the specialist. Sonar pulse, Ollie said shortly. Bounces like a beauty down all these tunnels. Got a big room up ahead that isn't where we were. Hope it's a docking bay, hold, somewhere else with access to the outside.
There were two bodies ahead, tumbled into one another at a conjunction of tunnels. The scorpion stepped over them, and Solis followed. The pain in her arm was only mounting, all that mechanic work having pushed the fracture past the point where she could ignore it. The injury ate into her combat readiness, chewing at the edges of her concentration. Then Ollie was moving downhill, at first scuttling, then galloping, and at last simply sliding, because the corridor became a shaft. Solis was right on her metal heels, trying to slow herself, because she could really do without a broken leg as well. The scorpion landed on three legs and two arms, one of which buckled. Kit's curled form was still held protectively close. Then, even as Solis dropped down to join them, Ollie was tilting the frame to avoid a scatter of magnetic shot that drilled holes into the frame's body. Solis ducked behind her, seeing a couple of Aklu's people running past. They were rushing down a much broader thoroughfare, heading elsewhere. And in their wake came Aklu itself. The unspeakable Aklu, the razor and the hook. The SEL glided into view, still perched on its A-grav couch, as though part of a procession, and just wondering where the cheering crowds had got to. Its gilded hiver Major Domo marched to one side, two holes punched in their tragedic face, but otherwise none the worse for wear. On the other side was Heremon, the Tothiat woman. She called for her boss to hurry and began shooting at the scorpion. Ollie cried out, hunched as low as she could get in the horribly exposed cockpit. With a bizarre feeling of sacrilege, Solis returned fire. She emptied the gun at the whole pack of them, knocking Heremon back with a hole in her chest, for all the good it would do. Then she saw what was coming and yelled at Ollie to get back, get down, except there was no back nor down to be had. The four-legged hiver with the rotary cannon stalked into view and levelled their entire body at the scorpion. Solis wasn't sure what ordnance it was packing, but surely enough to turn the frame into scrap, and her, Ollie and Kit into bloody shreds.
Shoot it! The specialist shouted at Solis. No ammo! Some fucking soldier!
And then a line of accelerator shot tore the hiver apart, even as the cannon spun up. It clipped off the hiver's leg, and a slick of frantic metal insects spilled out.
like living intestines. Another lashing barrage came, almost invisible save for its effects. It tore away one of the gilded majordomo's arms before shearing through Aklu's couch. With a scream of overstressed machinery and failing gravity engines, the whole stately conveyance sagged to one side and ploughed into the corridor wall, tearing up the mother-of-pearl inlay and leaving a blackened gouge of fried circuitry. A pair of Partheni in full armour ran into view, trying to shoot past the downed couch at Heremon, who they'd obviously identified as the real threat. Ollie ran the scorpion forwards, tail high, to serve the woman the same way as she had Mesmon. The unspeakable didn't look as though it would be razoring or hooking anyone in the immediate future, or perhaps forever, if the Partheni finished the creature off. Then, Aklu began to move. Ollie skidded to a sudden halt and began backing away. Her eyes were as wide as plates, and perhaps some smidgen of that was respect, from one enthusiast of the mechanical arts to another. The bulk of the broken couch was left behind, as Aklu unfolded a body out of it, like a deep sea monster forcing itself from a crevice. It rose up on a frame that was mostly segmented metal tentacles, black ringed with gold at the annular joints. In moments, the Essiel was borne aloft once more, the shimmer of a gravitic shield about its body. One limb lashed out like a whip and slapped down a Partheni Myrmidon, hard enough to send cracks crazing across the plates of her armour. "We go! Now!" Solis told Ollie. She'd been told her sisters would hold here and draw the enemy off. She was to get herself and any other civilians out. "Do you know where they attach the vulture to this ship? Your sonar good for that." "On it." Ollie closed her eyes to prioritise the frame's artificial senses. "Fuck me, though. Did you see that?" She sounded more impressed than Solis would have liked. "I'm still seeing it." Aklu was retreating down the broader tunnel, with Heremon and the Major Domo running interference. The mass of tentacles undulated beneath and around it, finding purchase on walls and ceiling. It carried the whole assemblage along faster than Solis could have run. "Got to get me one of those someday," Ollie said. For her part, Solis was remembering the odd respect the Essiel had shown the specialist, and now perhaps she understood. And is that what made it a renegade? The desire to move under its own power? Does that count as incurable insanity amongst a species that's supposed to just take root? Some weird part of her was trying to feel sympathy towards the alien gangster. A convenient anthropomorphic narrative that likely didn't get anywhere near a truth the Essiel would recognise. Then they dropped another level into a smaller corridor, mercifully away from where Aklu had been heading, and Ollie had found a hatch.
"I can't access ship systems," she complained. "Hegemony tech is not goddamn cooperating. I've got the vulture linked in, though. It's either right past here or it's right past the next hatch along and this goes into hard vacuum. How lucky do you feel?" "Hey, don't fall over on me. I'm not carrying you and Kit." "I'm fine." Solis felt anything but fine, but she'd be damned if she was going to admit it. "Go for it." Ollie set the scorpion's drill arm to the hatch and selected the smallest bit she had. She made a hole a little thicker than a human hair, and there was no instant loss of pressure, no fog of water crystals as the air froze. Solis took that as a good sign, as Ollie employed three separate arms to wrench the stubborn hatch open. Then finally, they were looking at the umbilical that led into the vulture's drone bay. They piled into the scavenger ship, and Ollie went straight for command and began working on detaching them. Solis took Kit to the Hanny's little room
and decanted him into his suspension pod. He didn't seem to have anything else that resembled a bed. Then she went for the human suspension pods and Idris. He was still there, and Solis breathed a huge sigh of relief. However, the bed's rudimentary readouts showed his condition had only deteriorated. Now would have been a really good time for him to have woken up, ready to take control of the ship. But he looked so fragile, a hollowed-out colonial with big ears and a thin face. Even unconscious, he seemed somehow frightened. And with good cause, she supposed. He faced the void for a living. And everyone thought that meant that Ents were just inured to it, naturally resistant to its horrors. Except he'd told her, way back in the Berlinhof medical camp, that it wasn't like that. They could navigate the void, but it didn't make it any less monstrous to them. It just condemned them to face it. The ship shuddered around her, and for a moment there was no internal gravity at all. Then it snapped back, wrenching her arm and all the other bruised and abused parts of her. She heard Ollie shout over the comms, "We're away!" Then on its heels came, "Fuck me! Everyone's away! What's the hurry?" "What now?" Solis forced herself not to sit down and pass out. Instead, she hustled over to the nearby drone bay, where she could raise some working screens. She found herself looking at the petalled mass of the broken harvest, although from their perspective it was upside down. The vulture's instruments had caught the chordae as it sped off, and Solis hoped her sisters had all made it out alive with Chris and Trine. Another ship was underway further out, a blocky colonial wedge, a little bigger than the vulture god. She enlarged the image to see it was covered in arcane-looking patterns in gold, red, and purple, marking it as Sathiel and company making good their escape. Then she saw what Ollie must have spotted, which had triggered the exodus. The harvest's gravitic drives were powering up, reaching for unspace. "We're too close," she said, as Ollie did her best to haul them as far from the bigger ship as possible. "Good luck to you, you bastard," came Ollie's voice. "We're going to have trouble with the old unspeakable again, you realise that?" "Yes," Solis agreed tightly. "But still," Ollie went on. Then the vulture's instruments froze briefly, refusing to process the space around them in any meaningful way. Perhaps they were throwing up major philosophical objections to the universe bending out of shape. Then they unlocked, reporting that the broken harvest had vanished itself away. In its wake, the chordae was hailing them. Before Ollie could create a major diplomatic incident and demand Chris's return, Solis patched into their comms from the drone bay.
"Chordae to Vulture and Myrmidon Executor Solis," came the crisp voice of one of her sisters. "Myrmidon Executor Grace speaking. We are for the Heaven Sword. Follow us in. Welcome home, sister."
On another channel, one that excluded the chordae, Ollie's voice came in calm and flat.
"It's like that, is it? And I bet you're already in your shiny tin suit with that holemaker in your hands, right?"
That would have been a good idea. The thought of getting into her armour seemed so logistically exhausting that Solis found herself swaying.
"What's your plan, Ollie? Idris needs help. Kit needs help. I know absolutely nothing about Hanny Med. My people can help. And you really trust Hugh anymore?"
She'd expected a barrage of expletives, but Ollie was quiet, thinking, the channel still open between them.
"I can see you now," she said at last. "You really haven't tooled up, have you, you dumbass? I could just open the hatch on you. You're practically standing on it."
"I appreciate that I'm not making the best tactical decisions at the moment," Solis said.
Ollie made a disgusted sound.
I wouldn't just abandon Chris to your lot, would I?
But there was less venom in her tone than her words might have suggested.
Tell the executioner we're on our way to the scaffold.
Solis wanted to correct her. Executor, one who does. It's not about killing people. But does implied a wide remit, and killing was in there somewhere. Ollie wasn't going to let her off that hook so easily.
Vulture to Corday, she told the other ship. Lead on, sister. We'll follow.